of data, disproportionate number of homeless youth are LGBT, disproportionate, rates of suicide ideation. You know, it just, all the data seems to suggest that there are some truly horrific outcomes that could happen. Abusive family homes, you know, not every home is as pleasant as the person who's listening to this. You know what I mean? Like, some people don't have the best crack in life. But is that done on purpose? Are we being told that this is a danger, the big liberal state going too far, not telling the parents? You know, is that trans folks, young trans students being made the scapegoat here?
Yeah, I would say so, that, this is part of, this belief that really the so-called parental rights is really focused on targeting the 2S LGBTQ plus community. They're not concerned with other children in schools and what they're learning, and particularly our trans and non-binary young people. You know, there's a belief that these are not legitimate or real identities, that these are somehow a fad or a new phenomenon. To your earlier point, as though trans individuals have not existed and flourished in past history, that somehow what undermines this is that old "don't say gay," legislation and this belief that particularly we're seeing in places like Florida and Texas and others that believe that somehow this is a contagion or a pathology that. Still that this is a choice or a lifestyle. Remember, those classic phrases that we've heard for decades. It's really interesting to me, too, because, the same arguments we heard against legalizing same-sex marriage in Canada, here they come again, right, under a new form, a new way. And it's actually, the folks who protested against same-sex marriage, who protested against inclusion of gender identity and gender expression in our human rights laws, who protested against the banning of conversion therapy practices. All of those arguments underlie the same parental rights sort of movement we hear, is that, that it's dangerous for 2S LGBTQ people to exist in society. They represent a threat, and they represent a direct threat, particularly to so-called vulnerable, impressionable children, that somehow they're being led astray into this sinister, deviant lifestyle that will result in the destruction of society and all of these old, tired, stereotypical arguments. And so what's I think disappointing and alarming is the momentum that some of this seems to be carrying in Canada, particularly with conservative governments and now the Conservative Party of Canada. We know that actually all of these policy changes, these legislative proposals, are all a violation of human rights and a violation of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is why, for example, Premier Scott Moe in Saskatchewan is now openly amused about using the notwithstanding clause over pronouns and chosen names in schools to exempt basically to legalize discrimination against vulnerable young people. Like, what kind of government does that? That's more of a dictatorship rather than a democracy. And mm-hmm. and see these kind of influences being led by the rise of populism, not only here in Canada, but across the world. And we just have to look at what's happening in Russia, targeting the LGBT community, Africa, Brazil, Italy. The 2S LGBT community becomes the convenient scapegoat for these far right governments to demonize and to villainize, right, so-called public enemy, to focus people's attention and distract them from, the real important issues that are going on.
I think it might be worth even zeroing in a little bit more local, and I'm going to zero in incredibly local here. It is astonishing the amount of people power that some politicians are putting into this war on pronouns when there is a nationwide shortage in bus drivers. Like, does it really matter what your child refers to themselves with if they can't physically get to school due to a nationwide bus driver shortage? You know what I mean? That, I think, exemplifies the look over there, issue that's happening here. There are real dynamic issues related to localized tax rates, related to priorities and spending for school boards in terms of air quality checks that were promised in school boards all over the country. You know, COVID is now being recommended to mask up again, get your next sort of vaccines. But let's focus our attention instead on whether or not we call them he, her, or they. And I think that this is kind of the exasperation that the queer community is feeling. It's like, look, we get it. You know, this is, you know, the Fast and Furious franchise is built around the concept of ma familia because it rings so powerfully true to so many people. Like, they are strumming the heartstrings of the Canadian nation here around your own children, about your ability to have conversations around the schooling. But they're doing so because they don't necessarily want you to look at that bus driver crisis, to look at the state of the economy, the fact that Loblaws is bringing in billions in profit, so feeding your child is becoming more and more difficult. Don't look at those issues. Don't look at getting to school. Don't look at feeding them at school. Don't look at those issues. Look at whether or not we can refer to them as he, she, or they without personally notifying you that that's the case. You know, it's, I can understand why it has become such a political hot potato, because it really is, it's a lot. You know, I'm wondering then, as somebody who has been researching LGBT youth for as long as you have on a range of topics, where do you think we are at in terms of this wheel of history that every now and then seems to trample queer folks underneath it?
Well, yeah, you know, it's sometimes it seems cyclical. You know, that for those who remember the 1970s and Anita Bryant, Miss Florida Orange Juice, and her campaign of hate under the Save Our Children mantra that sought to roll back ordinances that were passed in, for example, in Miami-Dade County that included sexual orientation, in the city to prevent people from being fired from being a city employee or to be a teacher or a police officer, and, campaigned against that successfully and got them rolled back. And so, with this belief that, you know, being gay or lesbian at the time was a public menace or was a danger, right? And again, it was all orchestrated that this was dangerous to kids, that, you know, since gays couldn't reproduce, they had to recruit, was her famous saying. And our communities mobilized and they fought back when Anita Bryant brought her tour, you know, through Canada. Communities protested and met her on the streets. And even when she came to Edmonton in 1978, it was a non-binary protester who chained themselves to the fence at the concert and, in this notion of peaceful protest and yelled throughout the concert, "Anita, you have us in chains." You know, just this, I think we need to turn back to this, these forms of protest and these forms of fighting back and learn the lessons of the past and the tremendous activism and the advocacy that our community has always done. You know, the lessons we've learned through fighting through the HIV and AIDS crisis, and not become complacent, right? And I'm very concerned in our own queer community that there are many who don't want to support trans and non-binary individuals, right? It's sort of to sever off the T from the and just leave it as being the lesbian and gay and bisexual. And that's not our past history. That's not, you know, our community needs to include everyone. No one gets left behind. And a lot of that speaks to our own internalized transphobia. And I think just in the public, you know, maybe we can think about equating it to where our understanding was of gay and lesbian issues 30 years ago, right? That's sort of where I think, you know, public people are understanding transgender. There's more visibility, but there's less understanding that's come with that. So I think it speaks to us to be even more visible, to be even more vocal, to call on more of our allies to stand up, right? Now is the time where allies don't back down, but they double down. And they talk about how can we provide more supports to the community to meet these new kind of challenges. And I think, you know, fundamentally, we're already seeing that because we're seeing, you know, communities come together and start to take these governments to court, because we know these policies are fundamentally discriminatory. Our laws are quite different in Canada than they are in the United States. And we know, right, if history teaches us anything, that we'll fight them through the courts and we will win. And it's more disturbing that governments are maybe even now aware of that and don't care and are willing to suspend laws and human rights in this country, you know, all over a chosen name and a student's pronoun and basically, you know, their right to be safe and cared for in their schools and in their communities. Like, you know, to me, that's unconscionable that we would target the most vulnerable, particularly our young people.
You know, it makes me, you know, politicians work from the will of the people. And I think really at this point, we are speaking to the audience, you know, we're speaking to folks listening. Your local representatives will respond to, you know, everyone says, call your representative. And I don't know, personally, I've almost never called my local representative because there are very few times where I'm like, okay, maybe this is something I need to talk about. But the reason why some of these premiers are emboldened to have these conversations is because they are hearing from enough people that they think it is the will of the people. And just think about that. If you're listening to this and maybe you're apathetic, maybe you haven't really spoken on either side, then your voice is missing from that conversation. You are not involved in that conversation. And they are only hearing from what is a very organized, more fundamental element of the community. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about an evangelist conference in, I think, St. Catharines, where they were very much organizing at the school board level to address the rise of LGBTQ presence across the country. You know, they are organized. Their voice is heard. Gay folks, we're more apathetic than we should be, but we're starting to speak up as well. But it's everyone else. You know, if you're not talking about this, then you're not talking and you are not involved. And I think that I have a lot of faith in Canadians as a whole. And we've seen surveys out of the UK, for example, that found that the vast majority of people in Britain, and I haven't seen a similar one here in Canada yet, but the vast majority of people are either not particularly bothered or would rather, you know, focus on Loblaws charging too much for a can of beans or, you know, school buses not being remotely available. You know, they'd rather focus on real issues and allow people to just live their lives in the best way that we can manage, you know, and not spend all of this time and political capital on whether or not we say he, she, or they. You know, I just, it's unbelievably frustrating, but I'm hoping that our listeners will hopefully take some time to think about it, because there are lives on the line here. Do you have any closing comments for our listeners?
Just to that point, you know, there was a recent poll that came out of what were the top issues for Canadians. And I can tell you in the top 10, none of them were pronouns and none of them were about chosen names or, you know, trans or non-binary health issues, right? They were the big issues that matter to most Canadians and they want their politicians focusing in on, right? But, you know, the economy, you know, food inflation, housing, you know, all of those everyday reality, you know, issues to be able to provide shelter and food for your, you know, your family and yourself. So again, that, you know, these are distractions, but to your point, right, we need to speak out. Silence equals consent. Right. We can't be that silent majority. A lot of these attempts now to take over school boards, to control what's being taught in schools. And, you know, they're coming first for the 2S LGBT community, but make no mistake, they're going to come for the other communities, too. The other, you know, minority communities in this country. And a lot of this is being led by, you know, the groups that had opposed abortion in Canada. And now they've refocused to target on the 2S LGBT community because it's all about bodily control and autonomy, right? Of your body and of your future and of your identity, right? The right so-called to choose, to have that. Coming first for the 2S LGBT community, you know, that LGBT people are not procreating, so therefore, right, they're not a productive part of society. Of course, we know, right, that is a total stereotype and a myth. But it all sort of comes back to this conservative evangelical belief. And so, you know, perhaps as communities, you know, what we need to do is remind ourselves of that maybe, you know, pride needs to return to being a protest more than ever right now. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to have a party, but it's another thing for us to remember that, you know, the rights that we've won can be rolled back, and that human rights are fragile, and we're seeing this attack, and the fact that it's attacking our most vulnerable are our young people, who are the, you know, not only the futures of society, the future of our 2S LGBT community, and we want them to have pride right in their identity, and for many ways not to have to go through some of the same struggles or crap that we had to go through, right? We're the ones here speaking today because we're the ones who survived. We know the many, we can all name and see those faces of those who didn't. And, you know, and part of us is fighting for them to make it through and, you know, not just to survive, but to thrive, right? And to bring that queer sense of joy and that community and that vibrancy, you know, back front and center in our communities. So get out, get involved, right? You know, so support progressive candidates, get out, run for your own school board, right? Go out to your own pride committee and talk about, right, the need to do more than just celebrate, but get out and involved in protecting our young people and advocating and fighting for our rights and holding people accountable, right? And holding our allies accountable and say, right, it's one thing to come and show up at our pride parade, but it's another thing to speak out within your own organization when our rights are under attack. So there's a lot that I think we can be doing. And again, holding when these governments are going to pass these regressive policies, well, you know, we're going to take them to court, but that takes support, that takes resources. And, you know, and it's tiring, the fact that we have to keep fighting to defend our very right to exist. Many of us thought, right, that time was over, right? And we could just focus on living our lives, but, you know, it's not over. And right. Perhaps, you know, now is the time more than ever for us to get out and get involved in some ways, right? Get angry and use that anger not to debilitate us, but to motivate us.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Wells, for joining us today and speaking on this. It is it's a powerful topic. We will be back just after this. Hello and welcome back to Can Queer Home.
Darling, darling, I know you better than most. Rolling. I want you to feel any way you want. Just keep the fire burning, baby. Keep the fire burning, baby. Keep the fire burning, baby. Burning all night ain't nothing more I am. Trouble. Trouble finds us. No, 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 don't let it blind us. Losing our minds, stressing out of time. Look in my eyes. Anyway, you know, just keep the
And that was Keep the Fire Burning by Goldschatz. And clearly it has been a bit of a day today. One day that Sebastian's not here and I have interviews repeating themselves, songs not playing the right way through. Clearly I cannot do this without him, but whatever you do, don't tell him that. I am very excited. We are joined now by Naomi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. I'm just going to turn you up a smidge so that our listeners can hear you as well. Wonderful. Now, earlier in this show, I did very briefly just mention the Masimari festival that's happening. But I don't think I could give it anywhere the kind of credence as you could. So do you want to just let our listeners know what the festival is? But bearing in mind that we have folks listening in Toronto, in Vancouver, and all over the place, and not necessarily in Montreal, you know, why and how can they get involved?
Sure. So first of all, the Foundation Masimadi is a foundation created to support and promote visual arts, so especially movies in the industry from the Afro-descendant community, but also LGBTQ+. As you said, we're definitely based in Montreal, but so through this festival, we have many activities in person, outside projection, inside also in movie theaters. We have panels, also conversation about the industry itself. But mainly it's about the online showcasing of Afro-queer content, short film, long film, everything. So all of those are available online all over Canada.
Now, when I was looking over it, and I know that you're the project manager for Momentum, you know, I think that's the piece that really sort of jumped out at me, this mentorship, this engagement, the workshops, the conferences. You know, how much work has been put into supporting these emerging screen creators, you know, these screenwriters and creators to kind of create these products that folks might be able to see?
A lot. You know, it's really hard to have content from this community on screen. So the point of this program, which is the first one of its category at Masimadi, is to support very strong base to content, which is like around movies and short film. So the point is really, like I said, create a strong base, which is usually a strong scenario. And to do that, we have to give them the opportunity to have access to information, to support inside the industry. So having mentoring, having, you know, workshop on how to penetrate that industry, how to talk to a producer, all little things that we don't really see. We just see like the act of writing a scenario, but also to sell it, to pitch it. It's something else.
What's some of the feedback that you've had from the participants that have been involved in this? You know, what are they saying about what they've learned and also about what they've been able to create from this support?
Well, the program has just started, so we only are at the few first sessions. But so far, everybody's really thrilled. They're really happy mostly to have this safe space to share the stories they want to tell. They don't want to, you know, they want to share and have this community and be able to have feedback in a constructive way where they can be their own selves without judgment, without being criticized. So that's mainly the main important point of this program, is to give them that sense of community and safe space where they can grow and create, you know, enjoy and peace.
I think, you know, we've talked a lot on the show about various film festivals, specifically LGBTQ film festivals, and really encouraging creators to very often it's not seeing yourself and then taking that step to create something so that yourself is represented. You know, that's a heck of a lot to take on. There's a lot of expectations there, a lot of pressures on there, a lot of forces pushing back against it. What words of wisdom would you give to our audience to encourage them to just take a few minutes and go check out the website and see some of these films?
Well, first of all, I think Afroqueer is everywhere. Afro and queer separately is everywhere. It could be your friend, it could be your cousin, your sister. So we're all connected in a certain way. And those stories, we are connected. If even if it's not directly, your story, you will know somebody who has lived that. And that helps you understand what people are going through and the challenges they're living. And it gives us just a little bit more empathy to live with each other.
Absolutely. Well, we strongly suggest that folks go and check it out. The you can find them online at massimadi.ca. That's MASSIMADI.ca. And I believe from there they can find all of the links that they're looking for. Thank you so much, Naomi, for joining us. And thank you, obviously, to Dr. Christopher Wells, who I spoke to earlier. I'm not going to thank Sebastian because I think he cursed the show. That's my takeaway. And we're going to be playing out with Quicksand by Cedar Roots. That's it for Ken Queer this week, and we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Witness the world's best cinema, meet the creators behind your favorite works, and encounter live shows that combine music and film at the Vancouver International Film Festival. Taking place from September 28th to October 8th, a stellar lineup of over 130 films from 70 countries will transport you to places you've never been. Embrace the magic of cinema with exceptional storytelling that leaves you captivated and inspired. Be in the room as VIFF Live shows breathe life into stories from the screen, combining live performance and cinema. And go behind the scenes with VIFF Talks, connecting you to the brilliant minds behind the work you love. Explore the program and get tickets now at VIFF.org. That's VIFF.org. Student discounts are available, and if you are between the ages of 19 and 25, you can also join VIFF's free U25 membership program.
It is.